Welcome to Owen and Brew's Barbecue. Thanks for joining us. We're finishing out the Bad Batch rewatch, and so we have cooked up special, big, huge helping, heaping dish of tapioca. As Nick starts to ponder why tapioca, I'm joined by Nick, myself, yeah. I'm Matt, and thanks for joining us.
I'm still thinking about it.
Tapioca. We saw the fall of Topoka City.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like tapioca. Every time I see Topoka City.
Now, what are you thinking about this? Like, I don't agree with it. I'm seeing a lot of like Facebook, Star Wars people, like news articles saying this is now the official ending of the Clone Wars, you know, because it brings to the end of an era of, you know, there's no more cloning facilities. And I don't agree with it. Me personally,
they took the Kaminoan at the very end to another facility.
Yeah, but like they're saying, well, now because you know the clones originated, you know, there in Kamino, and now that there's mm-hmm. no more Kamino, it's like this is kind of like now the official end of that end era, okay. You know, of that era. And I'm like, I still don't agree with it. I was like, no, I think the Clone Wars is over. I was like, but until the final clone is no longer part of the army, you know, like, or there's some rebellion, I was like, the clones are still in function. I was like, so until I see them completely be phased out, that's to me the end of that era. You know?
Okay. But you're drawing a line in the sand. You're
drawing
saying,
a line
no,
in the sand.
This
yeah.
is not, this is not. Yeah. Well, the three episodes that we're talking about tonight are the very last three of season one. War Mantle, Return to Kamino, and Kamino Lost. So,
they lose it though. I mean, like it's not like they just, you know, it was deleted from the archives.
Maybe it was like lost in their heart, you know?
Yeah.
Like Kamino lost to ourselves. I don't know. So this was kind of unfortunate because these last three, I feel like we could have probably talked about each one of these individually.
As they
release, like after...
especially the first two, you know.
Yes,
because I remember texting you saying like we should discuss these for once, episode by episode, instead of just kind of throwing them all, you know, together. Sure. Because there's definitely some things that you kind of need to talk to in order, instead of just kind of like, oh, that was cool, this was cool, like yeah.
Right.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's dive into War Mantle then. That's the first of the three that we get here. So, and I like the setting of this episode. It felt like Endor to me.
It did. Know?
Like
it
the forest kind of moon of Endor. We get this, basically this mission from Rex, right? Mm-hmm. To the group. So.
My OCD brain, I mean, like when I see the guy running though, when he puts the beacon down, I'm like, where'd he get the beacon? I was like, if he's a prisoner, where'd he get the beacon? Like, yeah, that's what I'd be like.
Probably picked it up on his way, you know?
Yeah, so. that's what I figured. But still, it's just one of those things like, oh, okay. And then, like, I still didn't get why they gave it the title of War Mantle. You know, I was putting a lot more.
Yeah, me too. That, I think you and I both probably were. I mean, I felt like this episode delivered on some satisfactory plot movement mm-hmm. and some really cool things that were, you know, okay, now we're in the final act, you know, it really kind of amped it up. It really, you really felt, even the fact that they brought in Gregor, the stakes felt higher, you know, but at no point did I really understand War Mantle, except for the fact that these troops that we're seeing, these TK numbers, right? You know, right. This is the first origin of the Stormtrooper. And it's cool that they give a nod to Ralph McQuarrie concept art mm-hmm. because that first Stormtrooper that we see is based on his original design. So bringing it all the way back. So it's kind of a cool tie in there.
There's a lot of things like I'd written down, and not to give away like all the cool stuff, but was it in this episode?
They also even have the theme, the original, Stormtrooper, kind of the march, the Imperial
right.
kind of march before that was Darth Vader's song.
Right. I mean, that's what I liked about this episode, the War Mantle, was I liked how they used echoes of the original themes in a lot. Like you hear them a lot, especially when they're just walking through the hallways. It's like they're walking through the Death Star in A New Hope. You hear the timpani music, very, you know, subtly. They're like, dum, 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 like, you know, like that. And then even then later, of course, you know, when they're being chased, you hear that very, you know, like it's just like, yeah, like you're like, ah, like, you know. And so I definitely liked that, like the, because they didn't overkill it like with the Bond theme, you know, just constantly, you know, they didn't just beat it.
I just went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you ever run through any halls, if you know wherever you're at, just have that music playing in the back of your mind, and it'll make it even more impactful. So, yeah, I like the setup of this. It also, there's a character that we see in this that apparently was introduced in a game, Republic Commando. I don't know if you had read about that.
That's what I figured with the Republic Commando. Like, there was definitely, I wasn't sure about, I figured one of us would figure it out. But yeah, but they've made two or three, you know, references to Republic Commando in season one of Bad Batch. You know, we've talked about it before, like with the heads up display, you know, with Hunter and things. It's like, oh, like, and so it's either Filoni or someone was just a really big fan of that game and wanted to throw out some nods to that, you know, 2005 game.
So the character Scorch, RC1262, appears in Republic Commando and also appeared in this episode. The plot behind Republic Commando revolves around the fact that these are the, these are, I guess the plot was, is that Mandalorians were training, you know, Mandalorians that were picked by Jango Fett had been training the next generation or the first generation of stormtroopers. So, so it kind of is cribbing off of that a little bit. You know, it's like we're seeing like just a slight variation of that. It feels to me, it's like, oh, well, they're being trained by not handpicked Jango Fett, but clones that were of Jango Fett. So, I like that. I like the camaraderie that we continue to get of the Bad Batch at this point. Like, it feels like they're kind of, you know, oh, like I like the whole thing with Wrecker. Oh, I think we should do what the kid wants to do. Is that in this episode? Oh,
yeah. Well, you mean the good points.
Yeah.
That's at the very beginning, right after Rex calls them and says, like, you know, I've got a mission for you guys, you know, and then really the vaguest mission possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then they all, it's also one of those things where it's like, Wrecker's not really a critical thinker.
No.
Because it's just like, oh, he's got a good point.
But I love Wrecker. I mean, he's the best. He brings the comedy and kind of that lightheartedness that you need. You know, it's like if it was all seriousness, like we wouldn't enjoy it. So. Yeah.
But you kind of, especially in this episode, I guess he doesn't mind or he doesn't notice that they kind of leave him behind with a lot. So it's kind of like, unless we need something, you know, it's like the Hulk. It's like, unless we need something smashed, we don't need you right here. You know? It's like,
we're doing a quiet mission this time.
Yeah.
That definitely is the case. So, I like this. This episode, it did also remind me of Rebels first season. So slight spoilers there for if you haven't seen Rebels yet. But the first season, there's basically the two-parter from that season is the main character. I don't know why my brain is blanking. I think it's just because it's later. But Kanan is captured. And then, of course, the teen's got to go rescue, right? You know, so it felt like that in a way to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about this, you know, just amongst ourselves, like, because I definitely have been reading some complaints from the casual viewers online about how, like, was Bad Batch just all filler? Like, I mean, and I kind of agree with them in a way, and that you can watch the first couple episodes and watch the last two and probably be okay. But having watched two Filoni series, as you have, and a lot of people listening hopefully have, that's every season one of Filoni series, is that, you know, it doesn't make sense now, but as the series goes on, he tends to bring back these characters that are introduced in season one, so you have some kind of relationship with them. And what was interesting about this season, though, is that he had two other series to go off of. So that's why we saw characters from Rebels. We saw characters from the Clone Wars introduced. I mean, not introduced, but just brought in.
And Mandalorian, too.
And Mandalorian.
So we're kind of getting... And it's almost like... And I also have friends who have not watched any of the other Star Wars cartoons. They've just decided, well, I liked The Mandalorian. I'm going to watch The Bad Batch.
Hmm.
So they're watching this without even having any knowledge of some of these other things. So these characters almost have to work autonomously on their own. I mean, just as, I mean, and we talked about with this with The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian had to walk that line of, okay, it's Star Wars, but you don't have to know everything.
Right.
But if you do know everything, it goes a little bit deeper if you want to. And it's got a fine thread to weave there. But I feel like there's a little bit of that happening here. Albeit, I feel like you could probably pare it down to 12 episodes, but I was going to talk about that at the end after we get through.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
We can
wait.
But I mean, you know, this is a favorable episode, though. Like, still, I think even with a slightly predictable end,
there's definitely,
I liked all of the adventure. I liked the tech flying the ship there, even at the end too, like trying to get them out. Like,
yeah, I mean, I liked that Omega, you know, got to fly a little bit, you know, then Tech's like, okay, I'll take over now, which would be any adult. You know, it's like,
right.
Like, yeah, you've done well, but I'll do it now, you know? And then there's things that I wanted a little bit more of, you know, like that we kind of were robbed of. Like, Gregor is only in this episode, and I would have liked to see him in the next episode.
Yeah,
but he's not in it. They just kind of throw him away in a line, you know, of like, oh, we left him with Sid. She wasn't happy, you know. But you know, it's like, because it's things like he said when they asked him after he gets shot, you know, he's carrying him through the exhaust vent. And they said, well, you know, why were you here? Why were you taken prisoner? And he's like, oh, because I was brought in as an instructor.
Yeah.
And you see that when they, just a few minutes earlier, when they're talking about the, when Echo is doing the system check of like who's in the base. And he's talking about how there's 50 clone commandos and 1,000 TK troopers, which is where we figure out, you know, these are TK troopers.
Yeah.
But, you know, he says basically, you know, I was brought in an instructor and I quickly realized I didn't want to be here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's where they leave it. And it's like, well, I wanted to know, like, why? Why did he come to this? Because, you know, it's kind of like all those captains, you know, even Crosshair, it's like good soldiers follow orders. And so it's like, what made him decide, oh, I don't want to train these,
right,
these new troopers? I mean, that's what I mean. Like, and it could have been just a one sentence thing, one more line, and you could have answered it, but it wasn't ever answered. So it kind of irked me just a little bit of like, come on, I want a little bit more.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, to critique the season, there's certain characters or certain moments that I want to go deeper with that it doesn't go deeper with, and other areas where it goes into stuff that I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about this. So, you know, there's moments where I definitely feel like, okay, you could put your foot on the gas here and just give us something more there. I was reading somewhere that Gregor acts the way that he does because of the explosion that we last saw him in Clone Wars.
Mm. So, yeah, he always acts like he's a little off. You know?
Yeah,
you can see that in his laugh. Like when they ask him something, he's kind of like, oh, yeah, like he's like, yeah, he's probably not all there. Yeah.
His laugh is really great though, because it's so unique that even if, again, if you've only seen Rebels and you haven't seen Clone Wars and you don't understand how he appears in Clone Wars, if you hear that laugh, you're like, oh, that's that guy. You know what I mean? Like, like you really only have to know a little bit and like hear his laugh. And it's so distinct that you'd be like, oh, that's the guy that's with Rex on, you know, Rebels or whatever. So
it's crazy how one actor does all of those.
It's voices. Yeah. To that point though, you know, for anybody that listens to audiobooks narrated by Mark Thompson, and who doesn't, he is one of the best narrators in the Star Wars universe for audiobooks. But that man's got some range, and if you've listened to any Star Wars, I mean, he's got to do a large volume of characters, and it always amazes me that he can bring such uniqueness to his voice. So yeah.
It's you know, out of all the Comic Cons I've been to, like that second year or first year I went was one of my favorites, because it's when you still had the official picks booth where they would have different casts from TV shows, movies, whatever there, and you could get their autographs and meet and talk to them. This is before Comic Con really blew up though. And, you know, that year they had all the voice actors from the Clone Wars. And that was one of the highlights. You know, most people don't give a crap about voiceover actors, but like, you know, the fact that you're meeting these people, and in your brain, you have an idea what they might look like, but all you've ever heard is their voice. And then like you realize like, oh my God, like you're that guy, you do Obi-Wan. Like, and you know, he looks nothing like what you would picture him to look like, you know? And,
Go ahead.
No, it's fine. But like, you know, like one guy, you know, who did Yoda, he did like five, you know, characters in the Clone Wars, you know? And like, it's just crazy. Like how talented these people are.
Mark Thompson does a pretty good Obi-Wan character. It's almost like an Obi-Wan impersonation, as one of the characters from the High Republic. And it just amuses me whenever I hear his voice, because I'm like, oh, that's totally Obi-Wan, but we know that's not Obi-Wan in the story.
right.
I saw a whole article which was confusing, because it made it sound as though the actress was cast for this role, but it wasn't. It was just about the fans that are petitioning to try to get the actress that does the voice of Sabine from Rebels to be the actual live action Sabine. Now
she's Indian, isn't she?
She is a different ethnicity.
Yeah.
Yes. Than what physically is represented by Sabine, who is clearly of Asian descent. So
yeah, the rumor that I've been reading is that it's going to be Chloe Bennett, who was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
But I also saw that same claim be shot down, saying, no, she's been cast as Alpha. Why am I forgetting the name? The Imperial scientist, female.
Oh, okay. Imperial scientist.
Crap.
Anyway. It'll come to you. So, but yeah, I think that they should at least stick with the ethnicity of the represented.
Well, yeah, because I mean, yeah, Sabine is clearly half Asian or maybe full Asian, and that's. Yeah, exactly. That's usually how I see it.
So, yeah.
Indian technically is Asian, but like
it is. It's a different part of Asia. Yeah. So, you know, it'd be like there's North America and, you know, Middle America and South America. I mean, like there's different looks that people definitely have, even from Canada to America sometimes. So, anyway, we're not here to talk about ethnicities, but I thought it was an interesting thing, because I was like, it was one of those, like, and I like her as an actress. She's appeared in The Good Place and gone on to be in other things. And I think she's got such a unique talent, but I'm kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm personally hoping that they cast someone that looks more like what Sabine does.
It'll be hard because... You know,
for sure.
For a cartoon, Sabine was smoking.
Well, it's not Jessica Rabbit here.
No, that's true. Nothing's ever going to be Jessica Rabbit. But she is not naughty. She's just drawn that way.
That is true. Speaking of things that are drawn naughty, Crosshair. The kind of going towards the end of this first episode, Warmantle, Hunter is captured.
Mm-hmm.
And... We see kind of a reunion.
Yeah. Like, you know what was funny to me is that what I took away more from that whole sequence was how Omega is loyal to a fault.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't know, even though she claimed to Sid that strategy is her thing, she is very compromised by her emotions. And, you know, sometimes the best strategy is to retreat. and regroup and think about your next move, not just immediately go back. And that's what she always wants to do. Even with, like, with AZ later right. on, it's like, even though she probably made the right thing there, but she was, she potentially would have died, you know, in that situation. And so that's what I mean. Like, so it's a weird youthful naivety with her, but also she's extremely smart. So I don't know, but I liked, you know, Crosshair coming, you know, in this very Darth Vader, Leia, New Hope scene of just like looking into the to cell bay and, you know, you'll do, you know, like,
like I wanted the whole crew, but they'll come for you.
And then, of course, and then we see the, oh, if you had something else to say.
No, go for it.
And then we see, you know, the last little bit as things that we've talked about with, which is very black and white, like from the whole point of the series, is that the Kaminoans are being phased out. And you see early on in the episode of the Empire taking out all the clone troopers, all the science, all the data, everything. And the Prime Minister, you know, basically is like, get everybody, we need to leave. And, you know, the Empire becomes wise to it, you know, by the end of the episode. And basically...
So why do you think she sold him out?
Do you think she did it?
Seemed like it.
It did seem like it, yeah. Like, I guess because maybe she wants... Maybe she's almost like Crosshair in a way. And that, you know, what Crosshair says at the very beginning of this next episode with, you know, Hunter arguing back and forth with him, like, you know, don't you realize that the clones will be phased out next? And he's like, not the ones that matter. You know? Right. And maybe that's what she was thinking too, is that the Prime Minister is not as important as I am. I have value. You don't, you know?
And perhaps she's still looking, she had some attachment to Omega. And that still, to me, that card hasn't played out. I thought we would see that play out this season.
Yeah.
We only really saw it play out kind of in the first act of this season.
Well, it's definitely going to be a backstory. You know, she is either done something deliberately with her with her DNA code that no one else knows about.
Right, right.
Or, I mean, Omega is definitely going to be
this leads into the next episode. And basically what we see kind of at the beginning of the, towards the beginning of the next episode. I don't want to jump too far, but this connects directly into the lab.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, oh, we're going to get some secrets revealed here, you know?
And we did in a way, you know.
And we did. Learned some nuggets. For sure. Yeah. There is definitely a timestamp placed on all of the characters now, as far as like who's older than who.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty unique.
If you remember, that was one of my first questions in one of our first episodes about the Bad Batch was, is Omega older? Is she, is she actually, does she have the growth enhancements, you know, and is she only just a few years old, or was she born and just didn't get any enhancements? So, and we found that answer is that she is actually older than them and she's never had. So she is really...
It makes sense because she'd be the same age as Boba.
Yes, yeah, she's her true age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty neat.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead there, but I wanted, you know, as we were talking about
It's fine. I mean, I think we've covered the first episode pretty well. So
yeah, and the second episode, Return to Kamino, which obviously like a high point of the season.
Yeah, I felt this was definitely in the top three episodes of the season. Yeah.
It definitely felt like it could have ended.
Yeah.
Like this could have been a cliffhanger ending for it. And without jumping ahead, I'm glad that we still got another episode. It reminded me and it made me think of you because your podcast about Game of Thrones, but it kind of reminded me of Game of Thrones where you think the last episode's going to be the one that's like has all of the amazing revelations or the really cool stuff, but it's actually the one right before.
I've forgotten about that actually. That's the way it was except for the last couple seasons. But like, it was always the ninth episode of Game of Thrones that was the best episode. It was not the tenth.
You're right. It just reminded me of that, of like how like all of that, and then the last episode is the falling action. It's right. Everything else falling into place, like the, and almost kind of like the emotional resonance or the emotional kind of aftermath of what you witnessed, mm-hmm. which I kind of enjoy seeing characters go through that, you know, as opposed to, you know, if it's nonstop, cool, action. Like we have no way of processing what we've seen, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but this return to Kamino, they find out, obviously through, the fact that they know that it's a trap, mm-hmm. you know, and yet there's kind of letting them know where Hunter is being held.
Yeah, it's interesting how what I like about this episode and even in the last episode is just the different points of view and how these characters tend to be, like the Bad Batch are the only ones that seem to be open to change. Whereas in Crosshair, Omega, Rampart, they're all have tunnel vision. As in, like, Crosshair makes some valid points, especially to Hunter later on, about what they were bred for. And I get his point of view on that. But, like, I don't see how... I mean, of course, he wasn't there, but, like, you know, Rampart basically... which echoes what Hunter says to Crosshair later. You know, Hunter later tells Crosshair, like, you're only be a number to them. That's it. Like, mm-hmm. that's your only value. And you see it, though, in Return of Kamino, right at the beginning, where the Empire, well, Rampart, anyway, basically leaves the entire operation of the capture of the Bad Batch to Crosshair. And he doesn't care. He's just like, mm-hmm. if he succeeds, great. If he doesn't succeed, no loss, you know? And there's this belief, you know, that you see in Crosshair of like, I am of value, but you're seeing that contradictory right there, you know, mm-hmm. in these scenes of like, mm-hmm. you think you're valuable. They don't think you're valuable.
Right.
And so that's why I think this episode was really interesting of just the difference in points of view. Hmm. And Hunter, you know, it's like Hunter and Crosshair are both in that way. Like, you know, Hunter's more open, like, because you see in the base in the last episode where they discover the base, Hunter makes a very logical decision, and so does Tech of like, this, we know nothing about this base. We're walking in blind. Most likely we would die from this. And then you have Echo change their mind like that. Just like, hey, you risked it all for me, not knowing anything, and it saved my life. And so that shows, you know, that they're open, you know, to changing their minds, whereas no one else does in the series. And so, I mean, so things like that that I pick up on that I enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that Omega, even though maybe in not those moments, like, we're seeing change fall across her. Right. Like, it's not necessarily like she's open for change. It's like change is happening to her. Her whole world has been turned upside down. And she's kind of, you know, she's the child in the wilderness that, like, right. things are happening to. So and then we're kind of seeing the effects of that play out across her. I just think about things that she witnesses, you know, that the wet hair mm-hmm. animation, which was awesome, yeah. you know, but like. When she's kind of sullen and going into that place and she's seen some, let's face it, she's seen some shit go down there, you know, and she's like, you can see it on her face. That's to me, like, mm-hmm. You know, as an audience, like, it's like, oh, okay. Like, I know what we're getting into here, you know, and what she's risking to do it. And they do at least make resolution at the end where, you know, Hunter says, hey, I'm sorry. I need you to come back here, which I liked because there was the promise made. So, you know, I get annoyed sometimes when they throw that word around and then it's mm-hmm. never paid off or addressed, or it's just like, oh, sorry. Right. Like, you know, so.
You made a good point that I just kind of want to briefly touch on about the animation. I always appreciate great animation. And you're right, the wet hair with Omega was great. And later on in the next episode, when you start getting these leaks of water coming in, the pressurized water spurting out, it's like each little dot of these, you know, it's like, it was unbelievable, like how good the representation of water was in these two episodes. Whereas, and I think we're spoiled on it.
Oh, we totally are. Like, I mean, people, we totally are. It's just like it's a abundance of riches that we watch on this thing, and then we just throw it away. Like oh, it's just a cartoon. So what? I mean, even that last shot sticks with me. Of Omega looking across the smoke billowing off of like what like has been ruined, her home, you know, it's a very like, it's a very Luke Skywalker looking at the burning
right
home
at the
moment.
Homestead. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, except it's just, it's a water, not a desert. And, you know, it just, I don't know. It's like, it's so good. The animation's just so.
And not to skip forward too much, but I found that very poetic. That in the last episode, when the Empire starts to pull out of Kamino, that the soldier that reports to Rampart is a clone. You know,
and
he actually says it with such heavy heart. You know, of like, you know, you can see him. You can see him like his helmet's down, like he just lost his home and he knows it.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a good soldier. You know, and.
I think one of the things that you know, you and I had talked about and you predicted and wanted to see happen and albeit like got me excited, I felt like they still delivered on everything from Kamino. But I mean, you know, talking about a clone empire war would be like really cool. And maybe we still might see that.
That's what I want.
You know, is, I mean, clones going against stormtroopers and clones, you know, dying.
And there's even room to even have the fall of Mandalore in Bad Batch now, if they want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, right now we know that, why am I forgetting her name? Katie Sackhoff.
Bo-Katan.
Bo-Katan. We know that Bo-Katan right now is in charge of Mandalore. And at some point the Empire is going to come in and wipe it all out. So it's like you could potentially show that here in Bad Batch, you know, from just a different point of view.
And we could potentially see Grogu at that cloning facility too at the end.
That's true.
So just throwing out ideas here since we're getting into the future of what Bad Batch holds. Sorry, I'm getting lost in our thoughts here.
All right, let's see. Where am I at?
There's some key points that happen there when they return to Kamino, right? So specifically, I'll let you read your notes.
Oh, okay. So
like I'm thinking of, I want to get to the cool part, but I know you probably have some other notes.
Well, there's just things that, you know, like, back to what I had originally said about Rampart not caring about Crosshair, but he immediately defers to, you know, his specialized mercenaries, you know, troopers, where he, you know, the trooper speaks up to him and says, I don't trust the commander with his old squad. And he's like, you know, we'll keep an eye on him. And what does she do? Right. Eventually she rats him out.
Yeah.
And says, like, you know, he failed. And it's just things like that that I noted, you know, like I liked. And then I also liked, you know, like, 'cause I'm just kind of going down my notes here. I liked that the Bad Batch really trusted Omega when they got to Kamino, in that they didn't dismiss her as like a kid. They didn't, you know, like, oh, you don't know anything. Like, she's like, no, trust me on this. There's a secret landing pad here, you know? And they did. They followed through with it, which I thought was neat. Because, you know, a lot of things, like, you can picture a lot of someone with an age difference like that going like, nah, what does she know? Just land over there, you know, and we'll do it. But I thought that was neat. And I like the idea of, like, that, you know, underwater pad coming up.
Oh, yeah. No, that was cool. I like the addition of that. Or, like, why wouldn't you have a station separate or a few miles away from the main port. I guess what I was saying earlier, even though we didn't get this war of clones versus stormtroopers, and even though we're not seeing as many clones,
it better come next season.
That's I think to your point though, we have been seeing them phased out. You know, they're slowly just dwindling out.
I guess it's just because I really want that. I think it needs to happen to have full closure. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to just have like a subtle, like, oh, the clones are dying out, you know, because like it's even like the little kids there. And I think it's in this episode. Yeah. In episode two, where, you know, they're walking along and they're only like six, 7 years old. And they actually ask, I've got her name written down somewhere.
Nala Say.
Like, you know, we're still going to be soldiers, right? She's like, yes, of course, but at another facility, you know? Right. And like, so I don't want to see like them just be almost like Padawans and just be killed off. I want to see a historic stand. Well, of clones,
I mean, this, you know? It could still happen.
Yeah.
You know, like if there's this other facility and I'll wait to talk about that facility. Back to Return to Mandalore. Return to Kamino. There's that. I like how there's the two things that are building. A, you have a rampart up in the Star Destroyer is about ready to like take out. We even get Tarkin with the "You may fire when ready." Like, oh my gosh! Like, just icing on a spoon right there. Like him, hearing just those words. But then you have what's happening, the turmoil that's actually happening in Tapioca City. You know, where you have what I called was the makeup sex moment.
Oh right.
You know, where all of a sudden they're, you know, they're about ready to kind of choose sides.
What I liked about this episode as well as in part two is that they don't directly say it, but it's that feeling of, you know, family often disagrees, but you're still family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we saw in both of these episodes with
I liked the payoff. I mean, I know you and I talked about this just, you know, before RCAD recorded, you know, about a week ago, but I liked the fact that we had a resolution to the very points we brought up in like the first or second episode, where it's like, why didn't they go back for Crosshair? Crosshair's their boy. Like, we're surely going to see them go back for Crosshair. Why haven't they gone back for Crosshair? And so, yeah, like, that's where I agree with you. You know, like, we see why Crosshair is upset. He's hurt, you know, and who wouldn't be? Like, you've been abandoned.
But I felt it was a very narrow point of view of him to think that way. I mean, it's almost, to me, it was almost like Sith thinking versus Jedi thinking, you know, and that it was all about him. And like, you know, you abandoned me, you know, you know, it's like,
and Hunter's like, look, you turned on us. You were going to kill us.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I mean, like, you can see both sides.
You do, you know, and like, just even the fact, like, don't be, you could totally hear Anakin saying like, don't become my enemy, you know? And then and then Obi-Wan going like, you know, Anakin, I never was, like, you know, like, it was like, it was kind of the same feeling of this, like, you're walking down that path, you know, of like just darkness versus like, don't do it. You know,
from my point of view, the clones are bad.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess there was my thought was, is like, why didn't they try to save him? And you had kind of cryptically messaged me, you know, after that episode aired, you know, the question of, is he telling the truth? Is Crosshair telling the truth in the fact that he already took his chip out?
Yeah, because I had a lot of thoughts about this one, you know, because I didn't believe it, and I still don't believe it. Because even though Hunter looks at the side of his head that's burnt where the chip would have been, you've also seen in the first few episodes of them putting him in that pod to enhance the chip.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, and then, of course, when he's like, when did you take it out? Mm-hmm. And he's like, does it matter? You know, like, I don't think he took it out. He either has lied to himself thinking he did. I just don't believe it. I don't believe.
So it's I went back to like look at his head, you know, and it was not scarred before. He had gray hair there, you know, mm-hmm. back in like episode 3, mm-hmm. And you see him kind of itching that area or like pawing at that specific area. Mm-hmm. So you see that happen, but there's no scar there. So the other guess or the other thought is the chip in the wrong place? Is he? Did he remove something, but he didn't remove it? You know what I mean? Like, it's still there, but it's in a, you know, it's more forward. Like, his is kind of more back behind the ear, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
back to the left.
It is kind of, but I think it's a little bit more forward and to the left. But anyway, yeah, the mystery still remains, though, I think, is whether the chip is legitimately removed or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting puzzle in that when he constantly reaffirms, like, this is who I am. I made my decision, you know. But I mean, of course, that's such a human trait of just believing in hope, and that it can't, you know. But even Omega says that, you know, towards the end of the last episode, where she's like, I wanted to believe it was the chip, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's just being a prick at that point.
Right.
You know? And I can say, like, I think it's the chip. So, like, I'm just going to keep believing that he has a chip in his head still.
I don't blame you. I like to believe that he still has a chip because it's easier to say. I almost kind of like the Schrodinger's cat. Effect of it, like, is it there or is it not? Regardless, they have to deal with him as a being who is a complete prick,
right?
Yeah, that's so real to life, you know, like we all have that person, you know.
But there's a lot, let's see what else in this episode. That there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, this is, to me, was the best of the three.
Yeah.
There's a lot more meat in it.
Well, you have them fighting off those basically like an earlier version of the Dark Troopers.
Dark Troopers?
Yeah.
Well, those are just the practice droids, I thought, you know, so, but
yeah. Yeah, but they're kind of like an earlier Dark, they have a very Dark Trooper look to them, so, mm-hmm. and it's a callback to the beginning of the season, like the first episode of the season, so.
Of forcing them to do it, yeah.
Yeah, like, I liked the callback to that, like, it was a nice, you know, hamburger sandwich there. So we get the return of AZ in this episode as well, which is nice. You think, oh, AZ, like, we're never gonna see him again.
Yeah.
And then we think, oh, at the end of the last episode, we think, oh, we're never gonna see AZ again. And then there's this whole. He's going to be the new C-3PO. He's going to be the new Gonky.
He is, because like Gonk can only do so much, and so it's like we gotta have a droid.
Did you like it when Gonky came in and like it was Worm Mantle? Like Gonky comes in for the rescue. Like she does something where she plugs something into Gonky, and Gonky gives the extra power, and it's like I thought it was funny because it's just like, oh, we finally got to use him for something. He's just a power droid sitting around doing it. It's like when you don't have a like a proper phone charger outlet, but you have a backup phone battery somewhere in your pack, and you're like, oh, I can use my Gonky. Sorry, I think backup power, you know. Little backup power battery packs, you know, Star Wars themed, should be shaped like a little Gonk droid. You can plug in, power up your phone when you're on the go. So
just trash. Everyone who doesn't know Star Wars, be like, why do you have a trash can for a battery?
Right.
Yeah. It's not a trash can. It's a Gonk battery.
It can have a little pop out USB port for those people that still like to store stuff on USB flash drives. So. I'm telling you, this is a money maker right here. You know, like it's probably like less than $5 to make, but mark it up with that Star Wars logo and it's $40.
If money can be made off of it in a Star Wars theme, someone's already thought of it. I mean, there's so much stuff I've got that's Star Wars. That I'm just like, I gotta have it. Like, I've got so many chopsticks that are look like lightsabers. That are just like, you know, it's like, I don't even use chopsticks, but I have them.
Well, when you move into your new house, so for everybody that doesn't listen to RCAD and hasn't been following the lifestyles of the Nick and Famous, he has bought a new house and he's getting to move in there. And I hope his entire kitchen is Star Wars themed. They've made toasters, waffle irons, blenders, you know, like a, crock pots. Yep.
Yeah, the only thing is I have that are Star Wars themes for kitchens. I have multiple variations of ice cube makers.
Yes.
I've got Hans and Carbonite ice cubes. I've got R2-D2s. I've got a full Death Star circle cube.
Seen that one. You got the BB-8 one, too.
I don't have the BB-8.
Of course you wouldn't.
I don't buy anything sequels. Are they
the silicone?
Yeah, the silicone ones, yeah.
So something my son taught me how to do is you melt down Jolly Ranchers into kind of like a syrup form, and you can pour them into that silicone. So you could make a big, giant Death Star out of Jolly Rancher.
You could.
It'd be more powerful than a smaller
Jolly Rancher. A couple years ago. Had to be around 2017. Yeah, it had to be 2017 because it was the 40th anniversary. Roomba made two different Roombas that were Star Wars themed.
Wasn't there like a...
There was a white one that was a Stormtrooper one and a black one that was Vader. And the black one was like the high-end one. And I didn't even need it. I didn't buy it, but I really wanted it. Because it was one of those, like, when you activated it, it did like all the Darth Vader breathing, you know, and it... And it said, like, I think it had four lines from the movies, you know, that would say, you know, and it's like activate all too easy, you know, and like cleaning your house, you know, like, and I was like, I really want the Darth Vader Roomba, you know, like, and I never bought it, but it's like things like that. But, let's see, but like, it's funny, like, when you buy a house, though, because, like,
I would be really pissed, though, if one of the phrases was, no.
No. Yeah.
I would be like, no. I would be so mad.
But like, it's one of those, to me, it's kind of like what we were talking about before we hit record. We're talking about, I have a room that I've designated for my Lego room. It's one of those, you know, like, where do you draw the line of like, these rooms are for adults, you know, as in like, I'm a grown adult and these are for like the kid adult, you know, in me. And so that whole middle level of the house, that's like the kitchen, living room, like that's going to be like, okay.
Adult.
You know? But really in real life, I want the whole daggum house to be nothing but geek, you know?
I'm always amazed at the number of appliances that are Star Wars themed. So pizza cutters.
Yeah.
Spatulas, like you name it, like they make it. So
yet no space balls. Yeah, that was part of the agreement though with Lucas, but all the merchandise,
all the merchandise. Okay, back to the show though. What else do we want to say about this?
I mean, I think we've covered the middle episode pretty well, different things. So everything I'm reading through, like we've kind of already touched on it all.
I mean, obviously they rescue Hunter and there's a whole showdown that happens. And there's a really cool turning moment where Crosshair like helps them out and he's set up his little mirrors.
Yeah, mirrors
are
neat. Yeah.
And I liked that. Like I liked the fact that if you were paying attention, you were clued in on it. Right before it happened, just like the Bad Batch.
This is really what I want. I think we'll see it next season. Is like really and truly, what is Crosshair's motivation? Because in a way, he makes this a case to Hunter that we're superior. We were bred for this. Think of what we can do, you know? And it was very much like a Vader with Luke moment of like, join me and together we can rule, you know, the Empire. And like, because you see how little he thinks of these other troopers that he shoots through these mirrors. It's like, it's nothing to him. It's like, oh, now do you see my answer? You know, and it's you wonder, like, what's his end game with this? Like, because obviously he doesn't want to be just another cog in the wheel. Like, he wants to be some kind of person in charge, but still underneath the power and control of the Empire. And that's where I don't see what his end game is. Like, what does he really think he can accomplish?
You know? And as much as it would make sense that they become Scar Squadron, I just don't see them connecting into that, since it was something that only really kind of exists in the comics. But Scar mm-hmm. Squadron is an elite group of stormtroopers that are very Bad Batch like. Like, there's, you got the big heavy, you got the tech expert, you got the sharpshooter. I mean, it is very, very similar to Bad Batch. So Scar Squadron, they are an elite group of stormtroopers that are kind of hunting down Luke and the rebels in the Star Wars kind of Marvel series. So just for fans out there that are not in the know about Scar Squadron, or if you are, I just don't think that they're going to connect those two. Like, so it just, they never do. They never do.
It would make more sense if they were the Scar Squadron.
It would make more sense.
They all have a scar in their head. Like,
yeah, I like that. Yeah. And they have a second scar where they like put another chip back in to control them. This next episode. So
this one,
the episode ended with them running to their ship basically, and they don't make it.
Yeah.
The whole thing's falling apart. Definite cliffhanger moment. And I think even one of my kids was like, wait, there's another one. And I'm like, yeah, that wasn't the cliffhanger, you know? And quite literally, I mean, I mentioned it, like the next episode is all the falling action, literally all of the falling action. Like,
I was a little disappointed with the last episode. I got it. I understood why it was mm-hmm. done.
Yeah.
Cause this is the last time we're going to see Kamino. There's a lot of things, a lot of even nice little shots to show, like, you know, like, oh, you're seeing all the little baby tubes again. You're seeing all these little things. But to me, it was one of those episodes where, like, this was a half an hour of them literally running through Kamino, mm-hmm. just trying to escape. I was like, it could have been cut down quite a bit because there was very little plot in this.
Yeah, the plot is basically like kind of twofold. It's like them just trying to physically escape Kamino, mm-hmm. and then two, them dealing with the emotional impact of, like, basically, you know, why Crosshair's a prick.
Yeah, basically. That's basically, like losing their home and losing Crosshair. That's it. Yeah. Like, that's the only, and like, I actually, when I was rewatching this before we hit record, like, I fast forwarded over a lot of this last episode. One, because I didn't have the time to watch it all. But two, it's just like, I get it. I can watch this at 2x speed and still totally understand what's going on.
One kind of like really cool nugget though at the end. You know, basically the very last sequence that we get after they fly off, right, is we get we get what I thought was Wayland, and the Imperial base in the mountain, like the Emperor's.
That was so cool.
Yeah,
like, I was like, how have we not seen something like this before now? Of like just a full mountain with just a line through it of like, here is a base inside this mountain.
Yep. I saw it, I immediately thought of Heir to the Empire. Mm. And I thought of the Emperor's, like, you know, treasure trove of stuff in these mountains that he had created. So whether or not that is officially what that is, but to me, like, visually, like, that's immediately what I thought of. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, if we can get to this point where we see some of these things from Legends made into canon in real life, like, great, you know, because that can explain a lot. So,
I mean, aside from just Crosshair's a prick, you know, because you expected Omega to say something to him, mm-hmm. And that's really the value. I mean, really, if I had to sum up the entire last episode in a sentence, it'd be like, they run, they escape, Crosshair's a prick. Like, you know, Omega tries to, you know, like...
I think the other disappointing thing about that last episode was that I kind of wanted one more mystery revealed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I felt like the mystery was already...
Well, I mean, like, to me, like...
I wanted to see,
as soon as they took off, as soon as they took off in the Marauder, I thought that was it. That was going to be the last thing we saw.
Right.
But, you know, we do get this bonus scene.
Yeah.
And it's important, not from what you're seeing from the Kaminoan point of view, but for who walks out.
Yeah.
Which is this cloner division of the Empire,
mm-hmm.
person, we don't know who it is, who basically says, like, oh, you're going to be of great value to the Empire. And you see from the sleeve, you know, it's that two-line division, which you see on in episode two. You see that on
Dr. Pershing.
Yeah, Dr. Pershing. You see it in Dr. Pershing and The Mandalorian, but you see it in episode two as well of Star Wars, the movies, on the young clones, you know, while they're training with the helmets on. Like, you see that thing there. You see it in, as well in another series too. Like, but you've seen that symbol several times. Mm-hmm. So that's where, like you were saying, like, you know, at some point you have potential to see Baby Yoda maybe here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of doors that can be opened from that, just that one little nugget that you see there.
I'm not saying that this is going to be Bad Batch with Grogu, but I've thought for a while, not even like, and I'm still saying like, this is like late seasons in the show, is that we might see something with the Bad Batch, like rescuing, escaping.
I can see him just as, like, grabbing him and going, but I can't see him anything. Because, I mean, he was already taking naps and, you know, years later. So it's like, he's not going to do any force or anything.
No.
But yeah, I could. That would be cool just to see like a quick little episode of like, oh, here's Baby Yoda. Like,
yeah.
I'm always going to say Baby Yoda. I don't care if anyone out there says it's Grogu. I'm always going to say Baby Yoda.
Until we start recording again. Season 3.
Whatever it
comes out.
It's going to be still going to be Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda!
Okay, so this entire season, 16 episodes, 16 too many. If we could pare it down, I think we could get down to 10 episodes.
Or less.
Maybe 12.
Yeah,
well, you have Aftermath, which is the first one.
Mm-hmm. This is important. Yep.
Cut and Run, you could cut. Replacements is important because we actually see the ramifications and the fallout with Crosshair in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And what is actually occurring there. Fast forward to Battle Scars, which is the 7th episode. Reunion and Bounty Lost. Like, those three right together were kind of a high point in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even include Cornered, which had the introduction of Fennec Shand, but you could have Cornered in there.
It's one of those, like, if someone asked me to make a list of important episodes, just because it's important what's going to happen later, it's like, well, you need to have an introduction to Fennec.
Right.
But by itself alone, it's not important.
So at this point, episodes 1, 3, 7, 8, 9, and then skip forward. You can skip over Common Ground and go to Devil's Deal and Rescue to Ryloth. I think it's important seeing the Hera episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Skip over Infested. Infested is still ranked the worst, and I hate that episode.
And for good reason.
Yeah, it's right up there with the wasted episode in Clone Wars Season 7, which I refuse to watch ever again. Then you have the last three, Warmantle, Return to Kamino, and Kamino Lost.
That whole middle arc, though, of Season 7 is kind of a waste. But
I mean, at least the first episode, the last episode.
Yeah, the middle one, yeah, is completely a waste.
Yeah. So anyway, that's at least how I would shake this season down if we could make some edits. And I personally, I don't think that it should just be like a movie, like some other people on Twitter that probably don't listen to the show. But I don't think that it should be limited to just a movie. But I do think that perhaps more of a mini series approach, or thinking in terms of, you know, keeping it to a 12 or 10 episode arc. Like I would prefer a higher quality, you know.
Obviously Disney Plus is going to milk this and make as much as they can. But I would, to me, it would be, if I had to choose, I would probably do 3 seasons, 4 episodes, and that's it.
Wow.
As in, but like, it basically be a movie to each one, but a stretched out movie. Because you want to see different phases of what the Bad Batch is doing. Because like a movie to me could not work. Like you couldn't just do one movie. It's just like how we talked about how with like Falcon and the Winter Soldier series.
Yeah.
You need to have that because you couldn't just end with Endgame and then have Falcon now be the new Captain America in the next movie because audiences would not accept it. You need to have that buffer to slowly accept
it. There was one character arc that you mentioned here, a character moment when they return to Kamino and they trust. I mean, not that they didn't trust her to begin with, but the fact that you saw Omega part of the team, mm-hmm. like, you know, providing, like, even when she's giving them orders as to what to do, and then, Crosshair's upset.
The kid's making the decisions now.
Right. You know, I mean, as much as that one episode was annoying, Common Ground, it did set up this idea that she was a strategist. Like, mm-hmm. that's her power. So, and I'm with you. I think that some of these characters that they have introduced will pay off more in season 2. I just don't give me any filler. Like, I don't know, pare it down. Like, I would have been fine with 12. So that's my only, like, criticism about, you know,
but this, I mean, that to me was, so. I mean, that's every Hondo episode in Clone Wars to me was an eye rolling moment.
Sure.
And I hate it. But, you know, but in Rebels, I love him.
It's so crazy how certain characters can work in different. Mm. I will say this, though. I do like having a show to turn to, you know, every Friday. You know, it's like, oh, hey, we got another episode. Oh, hey, we got another. You know, it was very consistent. There was no, like, oh, we didn't get something, and I would have rather have enjoyed this stretched out than binging it. So
yeah,
as weird as that might sound, because, you know, binging it, you know, I don't know if I would have paid as much attention to it. So,
mm-hmm, of course.
Real quick though. Next up in the lineup of Star Wars entertainment that we're going to be thrown at, that's going to be thrown at us, and I hope that you and I cover this, is Visions, Star mm-hmm. Wars Visions. I think that's coming out in September, I believe. Okay. So that's something exciting to look forward to in a month's time, and really excited to see kind of, as opposed to the Marvel What If, which I've seen a lot of Star Wars fans clamoring for something like that, you know, like the Infinities of Dark Horse, mm-hmm. You know, which would be cool. I mean, you know, everybody wants to see what if Anakin hadn't turned to the dark side, and, you know, some kind of things like that play out. I'm excited because Visions is basically creativity unbridled. It's basically giving artists like the, hey, play in our universe and do whatever you want to do. And I think that idea is really unique, and I would like to see them continue that. Like, you know, maybe Visions is just kind of a one and done series, but, you know, maybe it's something that they return to, like with other animators, you know, or artists.
It could be awesome. I would be fine with them taking the Certain Point of View books and making those, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone, because there's definitely a couple in there that are stinkers, but mm-hmm. But some of those stories are really good. But yeah, like I liked. I've only watched the first one. I think the second one's not out yet. Of the what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Red Skull going out like a little punk, because I love the Red Skull. I think he's one of the best villains in Marvel, and the way he went out was just like, no, No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. But other than that, I liked the episode.
Yeah, the animation was really great. A lot of fun. And, you know, it got the attention of my daughter, who can be a little bit more skittish on Marvel stuff. So, but I knew once she saw, you know, that this was going to be a female heroine centric character, she would be like glued to the screen for at least the 20 minutes or 30 minutes that it was. So, real quick, I'm going to just do a commercial break right here.
All right. We forgot about that.
And go ahead.
This is a question I thought of the other day. And since we're at the end of season one, we don't know how many seasons we're going to get of the Bad Batch.
Right.
But how do you think it's going to end? Ooh. Because it's one of those things that, you know, we could look back in four more seasons and be like, wow, we were way off. You know, but or could we get dead? We could be dead on. Who knows?
That's a good question. Whether or not they ever find Grogu or that ties in, who knows? It does seem like it needs to be a Rogue One tragedy story, though.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Yep.
I mean, you really can't have these characters going off into the sunset. I think if anything, it might be something where we see Omega burying or saying goodbye, or something happens where they're saving Omega one last time, and she has to go into hiding.
Right.
To me, it makes the most amount of sense if they keep Omega alive, and then we see, like I said, we see her return in the Book of Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know. I don't know when they're going to have those two characters interact. It'd be interesting to see them interact in this time frame. But again, they might be like saying like, well, let's save this, you know. I don't know. But I do think that's the tragedy is that they're going to do. It's kind of, you know, to go back to like the kind of macho movies, which I think is in the DNA of the Bad Batch. There's a certain kind of macho bravado, you know. We've talked about Stallone being an influence. I think about Schwarzenegger movies and the Terminator, and at the heart of Terminator 2, one of my favorites is that notion that, like, when she's talking about how the Terminator will do everything in his power to keep John protected,
right?
Like, I think about that with each one of the Bad Batch.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they will do everything in their power to protect Omega until the end. And that ultimately is a Rogue One ending, I think.
I see it too. I see them dying, at the end of the series. Yeah. And it could be one of those things like, how do we learn about the Death Star? Like, how did, even though we know it's coming from Galen in Rogue One, but what happens? Like, you know, like, we need something, because we're going to need some real legit reason for them to give up their lives.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, because we already see, you know, in Rebels how old Gregor and Rex and all they've gotten because they age so fast compared to regular folks. So I could see that, you know, like, I don't know. But I agree. I think that they will die at the end of the series, except Omega.
And I'm with you about like bringing in the Death Star. It is a large thing. They haven't played their Darth Vader card. They haven't played their Emperor card. They've played the Empire card.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's like, there's so much more that they're holding back, and they can do it whenever they want.
Right. And because I tend to think of things like Vader and Emperor, like those are the big characters, you know? And Bad Batch are minor characters. I mean, really, in the grand scheme of things, they're really just a little story in a big story. And so it's one of those things where, like, if we do come into something with the Death Star, it's going to be like the Bad Batch discovers this secret location where this secret weapon is being built, you know, by Wookiees. And so it could just be something like that. Like, it's just something like, we're the ones that informed Rex and the rebellion of this thing. You know,
I would love it if they, and this is something that, that they haven't, you know, we talk about Star Wars plot holes or areas that, that haven't been mined for information or story. We've never understood exactly how the Emperor got a second Death Star
approved,
approved, built that quickly. I mean, from Empire or from A New Hope to Return of the Jedi is basically 4 years.
Right. Well, it's no longer canon.
Yeah.
But that's what they, I remember reading that. The reason why the original Death Star took so long is because there were several attacks on it. And because it was built by Wookiees, it was built by slave labor, basically, right. The first one was. Whereas the second one is built completely different. And so it took longer, and it was lots of, you know, sabotage attempts on the first Death Star. And that's the excuse they always made of, like, why did it take 20-something years to build the first Death Star, but only 4 to build the second one, which was 3 times the size of it, you know?
The Rogue One tie-in novel, Catalyst. Mm-hmm. It really comes close to almost explaining it in a way where they could have been building both at the same time with two separate groups that didn't know each other were working on it. And
that could make sense too.
And there could be an interesting way that you could pull in the Geonosians because they basically were wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know. I mean, we kind of know, but we don't know exactly what happened to them after a certain point. So, I mean, we know that they got the plans, you know, but other than having like a glowing orb plan.
You're getting into that contact quote, you know, it's like, first rule of government spending. Why build one? We can build two for twice the price.
You know, I mean, if you have two teams competing, you know, it kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, definitely some food for thought for the Bad Batch. In general, I enjoyed this show.
I'm glad. Maybe we should do more.
No, I just meant like the Bad Batch in general as a show. Even with the things that has wrong with it, to me, it's still slightly better than Resistance. Obviously, it's not going to supplant Rebels or Clone Wars for me. So, but
yeah, I think to me, I still like Clone Wars the best, even though there's a lot of filler episodes in Clone Wars. Rebels is good. We talked about all these.
You know, yeah,
like, Clone Wars does not get good. Rebels does not get good until really the last 2 seasons. I mean, the second season's got its moments, but the third and fourth seasons of Rebels are superb. And I believe in Filoni. I think Filoni has really got a good head on his shoulders, and I think that season one will be just like any other show of his, where it's like, yeah, season one is, you know, it's a season one, you know, but then I think eventually it's going to find its stride and we're gonna be like, man, Bad Batch was so good in season three or whatever. You know?
And those people are going to be like, man, have you seen season two of Bad Batch? It totally makes Infested so much better.
Yeah.
Because those bugs come back and the guy that lost his horn, all of a sudden he's Visago. Oh,
yeah, he's the cool guy, dude.
He's the cool guy.
And if you want a good companion to while you're watching, you should listen to Owen and Bruce Barbecue.
Hi. So speaking of high, the High Republic, I know you haven't dove into that yet. And,
No, those books are boxed up currently.
I know you're in the middle of a move and when the time is right. But I have gone through and re-listened. So I finished the audiobook of The Rising Storm, which is the second book in that series. And then immediately I was like, I need to go back and re-listen to the first one because there's a lot of characters in the High Republic, and they appear in different stories, and so it can be a little confusing, which, you know, maybe it's a little bit easier when you're reading, because, you know, you see certain names or certain names kind of like build in, but, you know, audio sometimes you just don't have a good picture of what they might look like. So there are some little kind of cheat sheets, or you can just look up the characters, which StarWars.com has artist representations of a lot of those Jedi and those characters, because they, different ones appear in different stories, different books, different comics, and the timeline can get a little confusing if you've read any of the comic books out of order from the book. So there's a lot there, which is fun. I think it's a fun universe that Star Wars has created that is both that is completely in the literary world right now. There's nothing animated or movie wise, but it's still an enjoyable story. And I like kind of where things are headed with those characters. So, I recommend it. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was saying, it's funny how timelines blend, you know, like the more you read, because like I have all of the, I think it was Dark Horse that made them, like the original comic books Dark Horse made of the Clone Wars, you know, in the early 2000s. Like I, every now and then, will think of the stories in those and I'm like, wait, did that really happen? Is that canon? I don't remember. You know, and then like, I think a lot of people, Star Wars fans, we just choose to believe what we think is canon and what's not canon. You know?
Oh yeah,
because I love like the Force Unleashed story, and it's no longer canon, but I love the idea of Vader having a secret apprentice. You know, and I like, you know, that Vader, you know, sent him on these missions to kill Shaak Ti and the other guy, Coda, whatever his name is. And, you know, and then you do, because I've always wanted some kind of story from a Sith point of view. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, there's only a couple of books that are, you get that. Like, that's one of them, because you see Vader constantly betray Starkiller because he has to. Because mm-hmm. the Emperor's catching on, and he has to play this game of where's the value? Like, how can I advance myself, you know, in this situation? And it's the same as like with Lords of the Sith, which came out 4 years ago, 5 years
ago. Yeah, I think you told me about like it's basically like the Emperor and Darth Vader, like almost like against the world.
Yeah, well, they're going to do like a planet inspection or something on this Empire planet, and the Imperial officer in charge of that planet decides he's going to take the opportunity, because when are the odds are you going to have the Emperor and Vader on one shuttle, you know? So he decides we're going to kill them right now, and of course mm-hmm. they don't,
right?
You know, and so it's like a whole story of Vader and the Emperor on this planet trying to survive not only the Empire, but the natural elements of the planet and all these other things. And you're getting a lot of other stories, you know, that intertwine of like memories and flashbacks. And it's not the greatest of like all of Star Wars books, but there's definitely some interesting things that happen in it. You're like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know? And so, but that was what I'm saying. Like, I always like them when they're from this dark side point of view, because we get so little of it.
Well, you are a dark sider.
I am a dark sider. Yeah, I like it. I like it. Yeah.
Just so that we stay on the light side of things, I'm going to end this show.
Oh, well, bye, everybody.
No, I mean, we could continue.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm kidding. Just the way that you bluntly stated that, I'm sure everyone out there who's listening went, "Aw."
Well, if you like what we do, send us an email at theforceiswelldone@gmail.com. Unless your name is Raphael. Screw you, man.
Screw you, Raphael.
What are you doing? Why are you messing with us? Theforceiswelldone@gmail.com. Send us your Star Wars information.
Yeah. So for everyone out there that doesn't know, someone hacked our email and signed us up for a bunch of crap, and I'm having to unsubscribe to so many email chains right now because I'm Raphael, apparently.
So send us something other than spam. We would appreciate it. And we will most likely read your email on the podcast when we record next, which will probably most likely be for Visions. We'll see if Chris can return.
Unless your name's Raphael, I'm not reading your email.
We're not reading your email, Raphael.
I don't care. I don't care how good it is.
We are part of the Jay and Jack podcast empire. Go over to jayandjack.com, click on the patron link there and become a patron. Help the show out.
But we are a part of the Jay and Jack empire, but we're the superior part of the empire. We were bred for this. Join us.
We are the brothers batch.
Once again.
Well, Nick and I would be brothers and just talk about Star Wars probably five nights a week and still not repeat ourselves. But we won't do that to you. But we are going to thank some people that make this show possible. Not Crosshair Chris, who could not join us tonight. Boo. But more importantly, I'm going with the Bad Batch names here. I've used them throughout the season, and I'll try to retire them now until the next season of Bad Batch. We have Tech Tack, Wrecker Richter, Echo Ed, Omega Maggie, and Joanne the Hunter. There was no alliteration there, but I had to get Hunter in there somewhere. So thanks for doing what you do. No, oh, go ahead. Do you want to do your...
No, I said Hunter. Yeah.
Joanne the Hunter.
Hunter. Yeah.
Thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for making this show possible. This is a great show.